Morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, the 12th of July. Marcus, good morning. You've got overnight for us?
I certainly have been, and a better day today than we were expecting. Dow Jones was down 164, low volume in the US. Our futures this morning were up 18, and I think we're up about how much, Tom?
36 points when I took my notes.
36 points. And that follows yesterday's rather surprising 76-point fall. So it may just be that someone was doing a lot of selling yesterday, and they're not selling this morning, so we're getting a bit of a relief. Rally. NASDAQ was notably down 2.26% overnight, which was twice as much as the S&P 500. Europe was down a little bit. The resources complex took a bit of a nosedive overnight. We had the iron ore price down 1.8%, copper down 3%. Our resources sort of holding up okay today, has to be said, but some of the UK and US resources stocks down 3-4% overnight. And I read an article today about the Chinese economic bounce, which was expected to happen after they got over their COVID boom, and it really just hasn't happened. And we're seeing restrictions in other Chinese cities outside of Shanghai now, and you may have seen they've closed Macau casinos for a week, and some of the US Vegas-based companies with operations in Macau dropped 6% overnight. That was Wynn Resorts and Las Vegas Sands. So China not kicking in at this stage. Also overnight, a fund manager at BlackRock, biggest fund manager in the world, although I think a lot of it is passive stuff, but they said that they don't believe the Fed can negotiate a soft landing and there is no Goldilocks scenario for us. We've got record high petrol prices in Melbourne and Darwin. Zip and Cecil call off their merger, but I just thought that was a sort of sign of the market, wasn't it, that those BNPL companies just don't have the capacity now to even buy each other. We've got US dollar at a 20-year high, euro at a 20-year low. Inflation number coming up on Thursday morning, US results season coming up, and that's about that.
Very nice. Thank you, Marcus. Tom, what have you got left for us today?
Marcus took a lot of my thunder there, but all right. The technology, the only sector in negative territory today. Healthcare and utilities are outperforming. Eagers Automotive up more than 3%, first half profit to exceed guidance. Lake Resources in a trading halt, which Ben, you were going to talk about, I believe. And Viva Energy doing well, up 6% half-year earnings to jump 140%. So Viva doing very well. Consumer confidence down. And we have Metcash trading ex-dividend today. It's off about 2%.
Stuff, thank you, Tom. And worth noting too on that Zip and Cecil cancellation or termination of their merger. Zip's paying Cecil $11 million in cancellation.
Break fees, yeah.
Break fees, which just kind of shows the scale of these things. Even when they decide they're going to walk away, still $11 million down the drain.
You do have to also point out, Ben, that that was a compromise in terms of the break fees, because Zip would have had to have paid them $7 million in break fees if they broke it off, and Cecil had to pay $31 million in break fees if they broke it off. So they've kind of compromised in the middle at $11 million that Zip's going to pay Cecil.
Yeah, you could almost say the quotations around mutual termination. No land today, so I'll just quickly cover off on a couple of bits out of brokerland. Adairs has been downgraded to hold by Morgan's, ADH ticker for Adairs. Morgan is expecting the trading environment for retailers to deteriorate in FY23 due to inflationary inputs on housing budgets. They've cut earnings estimates on Adairs. They've cut earnings estimates, I think, on a lot of the retailers, flowing through that expectation of the tougher trading environment there, which I'll touch on in just a moment. But for Adairs, they've cut the earnings estimates. The price target has fallen from $3.50 to $2.50, but still 15% above the current price. The other retailers they hit, there was a lot of them, but some of the bigger ones, LaVisa, they cut their price target by 10%. They kept the recommendations the same on these, so just price target changes. JB Hi-Fi cut their price target by 16%, Rebel Group 22%, Beacon Lighting 24%, and The Reject Shop, the biggest price target cut at 40%.
Ben, just on that, I have noticed, because I've got a couple of retail stocks coming up in my session on the call today, and in doing the research for those, one of which will be JBH, there have been a lot of other brokers that have blanket downgraded the retail sector recently as well, and I believe UBS was one of them. So that's Morgan's you were talking about, but yeah, there's been a couple of other brokers up and down the street that are just ruling a line through a lot of these retailers for the next 12 months, yeah.
And we were having that conversation on the desk just earlier. At some point, they still have value of some sort, so some point there is a price. But there's a lot of negativity in there at the moment. One other little bit of interest from the broker stuff was Macquarie initiating coverage on nickel nickel miner Centaurus Metals, CTM, with an outperform and a target price of $1.30, which is 46% above the current price. That's it for broker stuff. Henry, what have you got in Henry's take today?
Well, I'm not going to steal your thunder too much on Late Resources, Ben, because I know you've done some work on that one, but I did read the JCAP report this morning and summarized it as well. But the important thing, I guess, for lithium, it just highlights how hard it is and how, I guess, how much skepticism there is about some of the projects that are supposed to come online. This is a project in Argentina high up in the Andes, and that is questionable according to JCAP. So talk about kicking a man when it's down, because Late Resources has been absolutely spanked anyway, but I'm sure you'll talk about that too. Interesting that Klarna valuation in terms of the buy now, pay later as well, that has been absolutely smashed in recent times, and they just raised some money at a brand new valuation. So I would imagine that Commonwealth Bank are going to have to take a big hit on that. Klarna has been valued at $6.7 billion, which is down from $46 billion in June last year. So in a year, they've managed to destroy $38 billion worth of valuation in Klarna. So Commonwealth Bank do have a small shareholding in that one. So something to bear in mind. The other thing to bear in mind is that the market, the volumes are absolutely anemic at the moment. There is no conviction. And one day we're up, the next day we're down. You know, yesterday we were down, now we're up 33 points. So it's pretty hard out there for any direction at the moment, I have to say, or any major themes. There's not a lot to go on today, I have to say, but resources still remain under pressure. And one thing to bear in mind is how the strong US dollar is going to affect US results season. Equally, it will affect our results season, because remember, BHP and Rio pay their dividends usually in US dollar terms. So that is going to be quite good for Aussie shareholders, given where we are at the moment.
That's a very good point. Thank you for that, Henry. On to our fresh ideas today. And Chris, I'll get you to kick us off.
Thank you, Ben. I'm taking a look at a stock called Renergen, stock code RLT for those playing at home. It's a stock I've been asked to cover on the call today on AusBiz. And just as I was doing the research, I found that it does look quite interesting. It's an emerging helium and natural gas producer, and it holds the rights to several world-class assets with exceptionally high helium concentrations. They did have a market announcement yesterday that they have successfully introduced gas into its plant in Virginia, South Africa. And what that means is that the plant is built, of course, and they've actually piped some gas in, and it's a testing phase, and the testing phase comes before commercial operations. But they've managed to pass that test, if you will. They're also extremely well funded. They've got a loan of up to $500 million from the US Development Finance Corporation, and there's a few other lenders that have provided letters of interest for a combined $600 million. So they've passed this milestone. They've got plenty of money. They've got some world-class assets. And this is one of those ones that's transitioning from being an explorer to a producer. And those events collectively de-risk the opportunity somewhat. So don't get me wrong, it still is a risky opportunity, but the chart looks good. They've got good news flow. They've hit some of those big milestones. And if for anyone who likes to play up that end of the risk curve, shall we say, I think this is a pretty good looking opportunity, and I'd be happily be a buyer at current levels.
The problem with this one, Chris, is it doesn't actually trade.
Okay.
There's less than 3,000 shares traded this morning, and it's pathetic in trading terms. So just bear in mind that if people are interested in it, it's hard to get set.
Let's hope the news flow sees a bit more activity.
On the flip side, a little bit of good news will go a long way.
Yes, this is true.
Yep.
Do you think everyone at the helium plant has a really high voice?
You're late. Hey, man, what's for lunch?
You idiot.
Thank you, Chris. Tom, what's your fresh idea?
My fresh idea today is APA Group. APA is the code. Results coming up on August 24. Share price doing quite well in the last year, up 26%, so outperforming the market quite significantly, and it's proving that boring utility stock narrative wrong. One of the last listed infrastructure plays, there's a fair bit of speculation about it being a potential target, and the last 5 years, if that's anything to go by, in regards to infrastructure M&A, it's setting it up pretty well as an attractive takeover target. There's speculation Shell is eyeing off or circling Australia's energy sector. Inflation-driven earnings leading to outperformance in the last year, so that's positioned it well heading into results in August. So APA one to look at. Safe, defensive, reliable earnings. It's doing all right.
Do you have a yield, Tom?
4.6% yield, yep. Gross, yep.
Very nice. Thank you, Tom. And as has been mentioned, I have had a look at Lake Resources and that JCAP report. report. I thought quite interesting, or quite funny even, at the top of the JCAP report is a disclaimer that basically says, be warned, we are activists, we are biased. The point of this report is to try and make the stock go down. So this isn't an unbiased piece of research. This is, you know, we're pushing one way and we're coming after them. So that's a good thing to keep in mind when you look at these kind of things. Some of the key points, just very briefly from their report, were Lake's promise of direct lithium extraction pilot plant starting at the end of the first half of 2019, which still hasn't been followed through on, which JCAP thinks is because the tech doesn't work. They have concerns around some of the technology that Lake's using. They are worried about the insiders selling. There was 8 million in stock sold last year by insiders and 41 million in options to companies that posted favorable research. That was the headline that I think the AFR was going on with this morning. So saying that's not great practice. And then probably the most entertaining one was they called the announcement, which caused quite a substantial rise in the share price, on their non-binding MOU to negotiate an offtake agreement with Ford. They called it like saying, I might meet you for a coffee to discuss buying a car. Gaming. Doesn't mean anything. It's an agreement to have a chat. So interesting stuff in there. Normally these things happen when the stock is right up the top and has been running along on a really good story. Lake is not that. It's down at something around 70 odd percent since its highs. It's been absolutely smashed, but it did come from 3 cents at the start of 2020. So it's been a roller coaster there. As I said, it's not anywhere near its highs. It's quite highly shorted already. So time will tell whether it's a buying or selling opportunity, but it always creates a bit of volatility and interest when these reports come out. And Marcus, you've got something in the fresh ideas for us as well.
Yes, I just had a quick observation. I was looking at the FANG Plus ETF after Henry mentioned it had dropped 4.5% overnight. And I just had a quick look at it compared to the NASDAQ ETF, both of which are listed in Australia. So one is FANG, F-A-N-G, the other is NDQ. And I just had a look at the two of them compared to each other. And the FANG ETF has only got 10 holdings. Each of the 10 holdings are 8 of the biggest stocks in the NASDAQ, plus Baidu, plus Alibaba, listed in China. And between them, they make up 100%. Just 10 stocks. And those have provided the biggest contribution to returns in the NASDAQ. And so when you have a look at them, the FANG ETF is more volatile. It goes up more when the NASDAQ goes up. It goes down more when the NASDAQ goes down. So if you were wanting to play a bottom in technology stocks, we have been, or have in the past in the strategy portfolio, bought NDQ. If you wanted better bang for your buck, which we might not want better bang for our buck, low volatility is good in the strategy portfolio. But if we wanted better bang for your buck, you might look at FANG instead of NDQ. So I was just pointing that out in the fresh ideas section today.
Just looking at that chart that you've got there, Mark, it's really interesting, the 2021 performance between the two, because the NASDAQ basically, though very volatile, remained about the same at the start and the end of the year, whereas the FANG plus something like a 50% rise there.
The reason for that was because the Chinese tech stocks fell over, if you remember. China started to work against the billionaires and particularly against Alibaba. So that topped out the ETF.
Very interesting. And we'll start with you for your strategy today.
Strategy is fairly simple today. I have got a few charts pointing out some of the extremes happening in the market. If the stock market is about spotting extremes and taking advantage of them, it's when you get sentiment, not necessarily sentiment, but when you get fundamental extremes that the biggest opportunities arise. So I've just pointed out some of the extremes with charts in the strategy piece today. Euro at a 20-year low. You can look at the charts in the strategy piece. US dollar at a 20-year high. US headline inflation, the highest it's been since 1980. US core inflation, same thing. The NASDAQ up 1,035% in 10 years. The oil price has doubled in a year, but the natural gas price is up 3 times in a year and 5.7 times in 2 years. Interest rates as well. Have a look at the long-term breakout on the 10-year bond yield, which has gone for, let's not ignore the fact, it's gone up 6 times from 0.5% to 3.0% in 2 years. The bottom line or the message is we are setting up for a monster buying opportunity at some point here when we can start to look through the inflation peak, the interest rate peak, and start to look through the cycle to a global economic recovery. There are going to be 1,000 ways to make money, and we are setting up for that, but not today by the looks of it. And I've also written in there, when the moment retirement comes, there are three things that members need to do. The first is make sure you're fully invested. That's always the most obvious thing. And that's what asset allocation's all about. When the bottom comes, people will hedge their bets. They'll continue to hold a lot of cash, probably will be one of the biggest mistakes. So make sure you're fully invested when the time comes. Then pick sectors, which is getting a bit cute. Yes, you can be fully invested and catch the bull market, but there is going to be a moment here where aggressive, active, interested members are going to be able to get exposure to rapidly moving stocks and sectors. And this will not necessarily be on fundamentals. It'll be on sentiment. It'll be on recovery. And the top of the list, I think there will obviously be technology stocks, resources stocks, cyclical stocks, stock market stocks, Macquarie, of course, and high PE stocks, which includes growth stocks, sentiment-driven stocks, hot sectors. And then at the back of the pack, obviously, will be defensive sectors. And I think at this stage, you probably imagine that if we've got over our inflation peak, energy will be lower than it is now as well. And after that, you pick stocks. There's so little depth in the Australian market that if you pick the sectors, the stocks pretty much pick themselves. But the point being, this will not be when the recovery comes, could be months away. But when the recovery comes, it's not the time to be standing on a mountain, telling everyone a story about a stock that they've never heard of that's got these fundamentals. You'll go blue in the face. Meanwhile, the stampede will be happening somewhere else. So don't go and stand on or get involved in the detail on one stock. The main game will be running with the pack when the pack starts running. And you can stay. It's not the time, for instance, to be buying CBA for income when you could be buying Macquarie for recovery type of thing. Obviously, most investors, when they talk about getting fully invested, will just buy the stocks. Most uninterested, detached, low stress investors, long-term investors will go and buy the stocks they already hold. They'll top up on income stocks if they're income investors. They won't chase recovery stocks. They won't try and make a buck quick. They'll just put more money in the stocks they already hold. So that's fine. You can be buying CBA for income, but the opportunity here from these extremes is to make quite quick money in a specific sector or stocks, and that will be the game. So looking for, I think, a recovery in at this stage, the anatomy could change by the time we get there, but at this stage, you'd be looking to buy resources, technology, stock market stocks. And just to show you, one of the ones I'm watching at the moment is Oz Minerals. The copper price down 43% in a few months. There's a chart in the strategy piece of the correlation between Oz Minerals and the copper price, very closely correlated. At some point, this whole commodity complex is going to bottom. And the stocks to trade will not be picked out on PE and yield. They'll be picked out on their correlation to commodity price recovery. And Oz Minerals stands out. Other quick thing at the end of strategy. If you think you've had it bad in Australia, spare a thought for the Chilean nationals. Their currency is down 50% in a decade and has just dropped 15% in a week or two. No overseas holidays or Mercedes for them. And if you think the Chileans have got it bad, you could be in Sri Lanka. Their currency is down 70%. It's just dropped 38%. And they certainly won't be traveling overseas anytime soon. So we could have it worse than having the stock market come off 15%.
Certainly could. Thank you, Marcus. Finally, our question of the day today, pretty easy one. What's the last book you read?
It was a book called Humankind, A Hopeful History. And if you're feeling down about humanity, this one will make you feel a little bit better. And the premise of it looks at how our success through evolution came from collaboration and friendliness, not this big Neanderthal that was strong and smarter than everyone and was able to be that survival of the fittest and just beat everyone to the punch or the food. And it looks at how, as a group and as we collaborated, that was the key for our evolutionary success. So it's quite nice.
Sounds nice.
It is. Chris?
The last book I listened to it when I go for my lunchtime walks, was Will by Will Smith. And it was post the incident, shall we say, at the Oscars. But it was an incredibly, yes, question?
You read it post the incident or it came out
post the incident? I read it post the incident.
I was going to say, that's
it came out before. It's an incredible insight. It is one of the best memoirs I've ever read. Some of these books are self-aggrandizing. This is anything but, and I'd highly recommend it.
Still can't forgive him for slapping someone on
stage. No, can't do that at all.
In a world which has got a bee in its bonnet about violence, especially physical to contact, other human beings, especially women, don't think it's okay to slap a man on stage. It's just absurd.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, anyway, it absolutely was.
He's lost me completely with that. No interest.
It was a pretty astonishing failure to read the room for someone that hasn't had too many big blunders in his long career.
No, it's been wall-to-wall successes up to that point, which provides a good context for the book. But yeah, I agree with with you, Marcus. It is unforgivable.
Thank you, Chris. Henry?
I am currently reading a book by Adrian McKinty, which is a story set in Belfast in the Troubles called The Cold, Cold Ground. And I love kind of detective novels. And this one is very funny, black humor, set against the IRA blowing things up back in the 80s. So I remember it very well. So I'm thoroughly enjoying this one.
Very nice. Thank you, Henry. Marcus?
Well, I'll give you my Audible list, my last four books in the last couple of months or so. Building a story brand. If you've got a small business like mine and you want to do some marketing or don't think you're doing it properly, they provided a lovely template for building your brand. Building a story brand, that was called Reach for the Sky, about Douglas Bader, who attended some of the...
Oh, great book.
It's terrible, Henry.
Oh, is it?
It is awful. I think maybe it's the delivery of it on Audible is just atrocious. It's like a robot.
And it's a great film.
A great film, but Douglas Bader, of course, crashed it wasn't a Spitfire, it was something else, ended up being famous for having no legs and flying in the Second World War. But of course, he actually crashed showing off, and it just comes through the book what a terrible, misogynist, arrogant man he was. And I think when they wrote the book, they didn't realize that wasn't fashionable. It was almost like, this is what people are like, and it's heroic. It wasn't. It's really unpleasant, man. So arrogant. And hate that sort of thing. And otherwise, Bill Bryson's Story of Everything, I can listen to that for hours and still listening to it. And the other one for golfers, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Pick that one out. Very quick read or listen. And Golf is Not a Game of Perfect.
Very nice list. Thank you, Marcus. Last book I read was The President is Missing by Bill Clinton and James Patterson, which is really cool. It's like a political thriller, and Bill Clinton's input helped to make it really accurate to like the underground tunnels. And so that is a good book. And I'm currently reading, but it's been put on pause for a little while, Barbarians at the Gate, which is about the leveraged buyout of RJR Nabisco.
Very it's good.
One of
yeah.
the financial
you have
staples.
To. If you're in finance, you have to read
I'm
it.
I'm about halfway through, and it's been a couple of months since I picked it up. So I've got to get back to it.
Good man.
And have you read Liar's Poker?
No, but that's also on the list. I do like Michael Lewis's other stuff.
Flash Boys.
Very good.
Very nice. All right. Thanks, guys. Some good recommendations there.
Thanks, see you tomorrow. Andrew.
I was playing golf at the weekend with one of my friends who has been listening to our morning meeting podcast for free for the past year, and he was looking a bit sad. And the reason he was looking a bit sad is because from the 1st of August, the Marcus Today Morning Meeting podcast is going dark. We are putting it behind the paywall. It'll be for members only. Anyone who wants to continue listening to the Marcus Today Morning Meeting podcast should do themselves a favour and us a favour and subscribe. And just to tickle you along, if you send an email to info@marcustoday.com.au and be very nice to Will, Chi-Chi and Karishma, they may just give you a bit of a promo code. Give it a go. We'll